So, good evening. And this evening I'm going to talk some about mindfulness as a factor of awakening. For those of you who weren't here last week I gave an introduction to what's called the seven factors of awakening. And the seven factors of awakening sometimes are seen as the sap running through the tree of Buddhism. So it nourishes it, makes it flower, makes it grow. It's kind of the essence. And it's interesting to think of it that way, that the essence of Buddhism is not a belief, but rather are psychological factors, mental factors, factors of the heart, which grow and develop and nourish us and the world. So today's topic is the factor of awakening called mindfulness. And as part of introducing this topic, I have a question for you. So imagine yourself in a difficult situation. I purposefully am not going to describe the difficult situation, leave it very vague so you can fill it in. So, some difficult situation. What might be the benefits of doing nothing but paying attention? What might be the benefits of not saying anything, of not doing anything, but to offer this difficult situation our full presence, really be present for it, really pay attention, but not act beyond that? What? I'm sure you can come up with some of the disadvantages doing that. There might be, you know, the truck is barreling down at you. But what are the advantages of just staying there, aware, attentive, present, nothing beyond that? So if we can pass the mic around, I can either call on some people or some brave people can volunteer. Straight to the back of the chair.
Just in the process of time itself, it may resolve on its own. Mm-hmm.
So giving a difficult situation time, things can resolve. Mm-hmm. Okay. Blake, out in the outer hall. In the outer hall.
You might be able to see and understand the situation more clearly.
Great. See and understand the situation more clearly.
It might be a means of camouflaging oneself.
In a good way? We're talking about good things now.
That's a good thing.
How so? Sometimes. Explain.
I believe the expression, not getting mud on yourself, or keeping out of the fire of whatever's going on.
So if you don't act and don't react to the situation, don't say anything, you're not going to cause any more problems for yourself. You stay out of trouble.
Yeah,
Something
you might
like
not
that.
Dig the hole any deeper.
You won't dig the hole any deeper. Good. But maybe you could do that by, it's a little bit different, because you could do that maybe by running away as well. Right? So here you're also being asked to stay present. So what's the difference between staying present and it's not getting in trouble but versus running away? And so you're not there to cause trouble, but you're not present. But do you have any thoughts?
Perhaps the advantage is when we don't react, we can feel where it is in the body. In other words, I was imagining the situation and I feel it in my chest.
So by not reacting, not speaking or doing anything, but just staying present, you can feel where in the body you're experiencing it, the subjective feeling. And it might open up to a whole bunch of things, to your whole subjective experience of whatever the situation might be, your feelings, your thoughts, your beliefs, your motivations. Okay, thank you. Behind you. Oh.
I find that if I'm just being present, I notice that the difficulty of the situation is mostly in my imagination. The suffering comes from either projecting into the future or recalling a past or having other considerations about it. But if I'm very, very still, as much as I hate to admit it, it really mostly is mental. The present moment, it's very rare that you're really being devoured by the tiger.
So much of the difficulties you're thinking about are projected imaginary difficulties.
Yeah, most of the difficulty is illusion.
And so if you can stay present, then you can maybe see through that imagination and see more clearly what's here.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right behind you.
Well, if the difficult situation involves another person, perhaps by not reacting and being still, it would completely change the dynamic between yourself and this other person. Perhaps the situation that's difficult is one that has occurred before, where by reacting, the other person perhaps expects you to react. And so if you don't react, it puts a whole different dynamic there and causes both parties to reflect and the dynamic to change and perhaps has an impact on the other person who expected differently and now had no intention on reflecting because they expected, let's say, a conflict to continue, and it didn't. So now another person might also benefit from you not doing anything.
It reminds me that there's a system of therapy called family systems therapy, where they look at the whole family as a system rather than looking at the individual client. They think of the client as part of a system of the family, and the whole family kind of has to somehow be dealt with as a system rather than the individual as their own inner psychological problem. And one of the little sayings I've been told in family systems therapy is that if one member of a family practices non-reactive awareness, the whole system moves towards health. So it's a little bit like what you said. The only thing I think what you emphasized mostly, I think, as a gentleman here did, was mostly, in a sense, what you emphasized is not reacting. And I'm adding another element into the question of actually staying present and attentive. So your answer was great, but there's another piece of seasoning in the soup, and that is that little piece of, oh, now he's going to try. So move it up here, there, Mike.
You'll notice I didn't reply. So I guess I let everybody else answer for me. I didn't, in fact, have to stay anything but present. But that wasn't deliberate, so I won't claim it. I would say, though, that I've seen and witnessed that not just happen in families, but in dynamics where you don't even know the person. In passing, where in just a few seconds of awareness or attention, you might be able to shift that dynamic.
Beautiful. So even just a few seconds of attention, of awareness, non-reactive awareness, you can shift the whole dynamic of any relationship at all. And one of the things I've seen is that sometimes through, you know, just being present in a full way, and even pausing sometimes, even 2 seconds, just kind of making eye contact, connecting, the whole relationship can deepen very quickly. The whole different kind of heartfelt connection or deepening sense of meaning or presence, or things can shift very quickly. Is there a mic over here?
By not reacting, it might also give you a clue as to a clue and an answer as to what got you there in the first place. Mm. That it completely has nothing to do with everybody else, but yourself.
Beautiful. So if you're not reacting but staying present and attentive, exploring, investigating the situation, you might have a chance to understand what got you there, the causes and conditions that brought you there. Great. Very good. In the back row, maybe one more.
I think if you stay open and present during a difficulty, that it has something to teach you. Mm-hmm. And you can, if you stay calm, you can learn from it.
And so difficult situations can be teaching situations for us, if we are calm, present, and mindful of the situation, as opposed to what?
As opposed to reacting and leaving your body and not staying present, uh-huh. you might miss what the universe is trying to give you.
Yeah, great. So there's so many ways of not being allowing that to happen. And there's reacting. There is giving advice. There is stating our opinion quickly. There is giving people a piece of our mind. There is certainly running away. There is getting frantic and calling for help. There is daydreaming and the mind drifting off into thought. There is, reliving the past over and over again and losing touch with what's here in the present. Maybe doing that, perhaps projecting some old situation onto the new situation. There's so many ways in which the mind can not be present for the situation, not really have clear, present awareness. So the practice of mindfulness, the function of mindfulness was described in many of the things we're talked about here. And that is that there's something very, very powerful, significant that can happen if we allow ourselves to be very attentive, very present for our experience, for ourselves, and allow something to reveal itself and show itself that maybe won't show itself if we're just in constant reactivity into what's happening. And this possibility of something seeing deeper, understanding deeper, allowing deeper things to move through us, to happen, to unfold, is so significant, I believe, that the practice of mindfulness I consider is a sacred practice. And when I talk to people who are Christians sometimes, and they ask, what kind of practice do you do? Sometimes, occasionally, I'll tell them, oh, it's close to what you do when you practice the presence of God. It's because some Christians have that practice. They practice the presence of God. And because, not that it, God is present for Buddhists, but that it seems so sacred, so profound, so significant, this very simple act of staying present and attentive to what's happening. The word for mindfulness is sati, which also has the meaning of to remember. It has both meanings, mindfulness and remembrance. And I like that in calling it remembrance, I like to kind of change the word a little bit or use a slightly different synonym, which is recollection. And part of the function of mindfulness is to recollect, to collect together. And it collects has a chance to collect together the situation that we're in when we're often, the situation's often quite fragmented or divided. So if we're thinking about the future and our body is here, then there's a fragmentation between our body and the future, if we're lost in the future. If we're projecting the past onto a present situation, then we're kind of disconnected from what's happening here. Many times we're disconnected from our feelings. We're disconnected from our thoughts and beliefs, disconnected from our body, our mind state. There's many things we're often not connected with. And part of the function of being present, attentive, is to kind of create the space, the possibility for all the disconnected parts to be collected, to recollect ourselves. And one of the functions of mindfulness is to make our psychophysical sense of self, psychophysical kind of operation, be harmonious and collected, be connected, so to recollect ourselves. So we talk about in mindfulness practicing four foundations of mindfulness, practicing the recollection of our body, collecting together our bodies, so our body is here, we're inhabiting our body, we're here present for our body. We talked about recollecting our feelings, recollecting our mind states, moods, our emotions, and recollecting the basic truths, the basic patterns of relationships that go on in the mind, in the heart. Some that lead us towards freedom and some that lead us to greater suffering. One of the patterns that we start seeing that lead us to greater freedom is the seven factors of awakening. Part of what we're recollecting in Buddhism are those wholesome factors, beautiful factors, that lead the mind to greater and greater freedom, greater and greater sense of well-being. Now, it's quite beautiful, I feel, that mindfulness, in being a recollecting phenomena, or saying a different way, mindfulness is kind of creating a space in which things can flow in, can grow and develop. It has a very strong tendency to draw towards it the other six factors of awakening. And as this practice of just staying attentive and present, okay, I'm going to stay present. It's a difficult situation or it's a beautiful situation. I'm going to stay present and attentive. Chances are if we do that, other things will follow in the wake of that. And the tradition talks about greater curiosity or investigation happening, kind of looking more closely. It talks about greater sense of energy or vitality that comes with that. And I've seen that many times in difficult situations that I know in one way of reacting, I can be drained. But if I stay present without reacting, I often feel kind of nice energy begins happening. I feel more alert, more alive, more vital. There can be a sense of joy that can happen, or delight. It can feel kind of delightful. There can be a greater sense of tranquility or calm in the situation. There can be greater concentration and focus. Okay, now I'm going to apply myself to the task at hand. And there can be greater sense of equanimity or balance in the situation. We're not pushed around by the situation. That's what it means, kind of not be reactive. So part of the function of mindfulness is to recollect. And a lot of that happens somewhat organically or somewhat, a little bit passively at times, simply by bringing yourself to the situation more fully and staying present and not reacting. But being attentive, bringing attention to it. So one of the meanings, another meaning of mindfulness, this recollecting, is to recollect, not to collect, you know, the whole situation, but to recollect certain things, to bring to mind certain things and hold it in the mind, so the mind doesn't wander off, kind of skim away or slip away from what we want to pay attention to. So to bring something to mind, like you might bring to mind a poem that you read. So you recollect the poem. You brought it to mind. It's a long poem. You have to kind of keep the focus, keep the concentration to kind of go through the whole poem as you recite it. So the same thing, if we can recollect the breathing. So in order to recollect the breathing, there has to be a certain kind of focus. And you have to let go of a lot of other things in order to stay and keep the breath as a primary focus, be mindful of the breath, to hold the breath in the mind. In holding the breath, for example, in the mind, in awareness, to recollect it, it also involves beginning to understand all the different things that are going on in the mind that keep you from being present for the breath. This is true for anything you pay attention to. The part of the function of mindfulness is to help us become aware of all the different forces that keep us from being attentive, being present. And some people see this as being very unfortunate, that your mind is so distractible. In the practice of mindfulness, we take that as part of what we're trying to learn about ourselves. So the very attempt to try to be attentive shows us how we're not attentive. It shows us the ways we're reactive. Shows us the ways we want to kind of jump in with some statement. Shows us the way we want to kind of fix the situation or do something. So to simply recollect and to try to be present, we start seeing all these other ways in which we are. And part of the process of mindfulness meditation, or any kind of mindfulness practice, is to beginning to winnow out, to separate out all the activities that we're doing which are not needed, which are extra. So even when I was sitting here with you meditating this evening with you, I could see, especially in the beginning of meditation, that, and I was trying to be mindful and present here, but at some point I was paying attention enough to notice that I was also kind of pushing a little bit, trying to push and trying to get concentrated. And I could feel the tension, this little tension, kind of leaning forward, pushing, I need to get concentrated here. And there was extra that was needed. And so when I saw that tension, I could soften and relax. And then the mindfulness became clear, more stabilized, more open. There could be other things that go on. There could be fear. There could be ambition. There can be judgment. There can be all kinds of judging going on. Oh, you know, that wasn't a good breath. I'm sure the person next to me had a better breath. And, you know, maybe I can borrow theirs. And so there's all these judgments, the stories, mind starts making stories. And so as we start to stay attentive and present, we start seeing more and more clearly all the things we're doing as extra. And one of the remarkable things, I believe, that happens over time, if you give yourself kind of a long time to be mindful, long time not to be non-reactive, you start settling away, deeper and deeper layers of extra activity in the mind. And one of the reasons why people get so calm in meditation is because a lot of the extra stuff that's not really needed falls away. And it's very interesting to sit down, maybe for some of you today, sit down after a busy day and then be surprised by all the momentum that's still going on in the mind, all the activity that's still going along, the thoughts, the concerns, the feelings and all that aren't really needed sitting here in this room. But they're going on, they're still happening. And so we get to see that, and some of it starts falling away. And then we can mindfulness becomes cleaner and cleaner, or more pure. So part of the process of mindfulness is the clarification of awareness itself. So awareness can rest without a lot of the extra baggage that tends to come with it. We're always attentive. I mean, pretty much always attentive. Attention is kind of always here. But attention often comes yoked, connected to a lot of different beliefs, reactions, agendas, different things we're doing. And so the process of mindfulness is to clarify that attention so the attention becomes clear and clear and begins to stand alone without all that stuff that we tend to bring with it. So as we do this, there are a few things that can happen. They say one of the ancient analogies for mindfulness is that mindfulness is like the gatekeeper of a fortified city. And because it's a fortified city with walls all around with only one gate, the gatekeeper watches everyone who comes and goes. And the gatekeeper decides who can come and go. And so mindfulness is when you're really present, when you recollect at the present moment, and really the present moment is like this gate. And if you're really there in the present moment, you can see what comes in and out, what moves through the gate of the mind. You can see what you want to say. You can see what you want to think. You can see what you want to do. You can see the impulses, the sensations, the feelings that are happening in the body, and how they come into the mind, and how they're going to influence the mind, how we pick them up. You stay in the present moment, the mind becomes like a gatekeeper. And then there's almost like a natural, easy sometimes, choice in the mind can make about what it wants to pick up and what it doesn't, what it lets go of. What it lets come into the mind, into the city, and what it keeps out. So you might, for example, be sitting here, and you might start thinking about the World Series next year. Who's going to win the World Series next year? This is a really important question for some people. And now the World Series, just for those of you who don't know, just ended yesterday. So it's now we have, you know, so like 360 days until the next one. I don't think sitting here meditating is a particularly great time to be thinking about who's going to win the World Series in a year from now. So those thoughts might bubble up. And the gatekeeper of the mind, because you're present, you see it coming up. You say, oh, no, thank you. Not now. And you let go of it. It seems a very wise thing to do. You're trying to be present and not get lost in World Series thoughts. So there's a whole series of things that great diverse number of things that can happen in the mind, happen in the heart, that with a little bit of wisdom, you might decide, I'll leave this alone. No need to pick it up. In the ordinary mind, the mind might not have the stability or the concentration, the focus to notice things coming and going in the mind, what we're picking up and what we're putting down. The opportunity in meditation is to actually watch in real time the picking up and the dropping. Real time making these choices. Oh, I let that one go. Oh, that's a good one. I'll pick it up. So we let some things come in, some things we let go of. And that's one of the functions of mindfulness, is to be that gatekeeper. Another function of mindfulness is, again, an ancient Buddhist analogy, is to be like a surgeon. Probably what you want, my guess is, at least back in the old days they did, if you would have a surgeon cut you up, you would like the surgeon to kind of take their hands and kind of feel around the place first and get a sense of it and poke around and really investigate, kind of understand what's there before they just kind of just go with their, you know, just slice away. You want the surgeon to probe and feel, and get to really know the place. And so mindfulness has also that function. Mindfulness is to begin sometimes in certain situations to probe, investigate, feel your way in. What is the situation here? What's really going on here? This investigation, getting to know better what's happening. So before we act, before we slice. So mindfulness as a presence of mind, that we have a presence of mind about what we're doing and what we're saying and what's going on. So we can talk without a presence of mind. You know, people who are crazy often can pay attention. But sometimes I think one of the definitions of being crazy is there's not a real presence of mind. They're not self-reflective awareness and understanding of what's happening. With mindfulness, there's a self-reflective awareness that understands what's going on in here within the gatekeeper. And then there's an ability with mindfulness to differentiate between those things which are healthy for us and those things which are not. Those things which cause us to suffer more and those things that don't. So one of the functions of mindfulness is to make this distinction between what helps us and what doesn't. What movements, what thoughts, what feelings, what activities are helpful and what's not. So mindfulness has a lot of different functions. A lot of those functions can operate somewhat passively, or, you know, kind of naturally or organically, if we just keep showing up and paying attention. And some of those functions involve kind of the use of our wisdom and understanding as we go along. So as mindfulness gets stronger, it tends to pull towards it these other factors of awakening, these other six factors, these beautiful factors of mind. And let me think here. Maybe I should be non-reactively aware for a minute, see where my mind is going with this talk. Well, I think I'll give you an analogy for mindfulness. Another that kind of comes from the ancient Buddhist tradition as well. And some of you have heard me do this before. But I want to give you this analogy, partly for this beautiful analogy, I believe, but also for the sake of the punchline. So those of you who have heard it before, maybe you don't remember the punchline, so you'll be on the edge of your seat. I have your attention now. It has to do with herding sheep. And the Buddha said that in the growing season, if you are a shepherd and your sheep or your cows, whatever, are wandering around the rice fields, eating along the levees, I guess, or whatever, the shepherd has to be very attentive that the sheep don't go and eat the other farmer's rice or the crops that are growing there. And so the farmer has to ride the sheep really close and push them away from there and there and just keep them on the right path where they can eat the weeds. But at the end of the growing season and the harvest and the crop has been harvested, then if there's no need to watch the sheep so carefully. And the sheep can go wandering around the stubble and eat as much as they want. So at the end of the harvest, the shepherd can sit up against a tree, in the shade of a tree, and just very kind of relaxed way, look out across the countryside and keep an eye on the sheep. But doesn't have to be worried about them, doesn't have to be riding them really close, shooing them this way and that way. Just relaxed, open, kind of taking them all in. When mindfulness is strong and well established, and the mind is not wandering off into all kinds of unhealthy places, unwelcome places, then the mindfulness is kind of like that relaxed shepherd that sits against a tree and just very open and relaxed and just watches all the activity of the mind and all the things that are going on around us, just kind of present, relaxed, open here. So I think it's a nice analogy, you know, the idea of mindfulness as being relaxed, open, spacious. Now the punchline is that if you do this carefully, relaxed, open, but very attentive, watching everything, then at some point, the attention also, the mindfulness also, will turn around and look at the shepherd. And you realize that the shepherd is just another sheep. Now, what do you think of that? It's all just sheep. That can be held and seen in the great space of the mind, the great openness of the mind. The mind which has a developed mindfulness has a lot of space. I was almost going to say has a lot of space in it. But I don't think it has any boundaries to say in or out. There's a tremendous amount of space. Some teachers like to do a little wordplay or a question. They'll ask, are you in this room or is this room in you? Which is it? Rationally we're in the room, right? But the room that we're in, experientially, the way it's experienced, it has to be experienced in the field of perception. And where does perceiving happen? Where is that field of perception occurring? Is this room in your field of perception? And if it's in your field of perception, are you in the room or is the room in you? So how spacious, how open can the mind be? How wide can it be? So I said earlier that I consider mindfulness as being sacred. And in particular, I feel mindfulness is sacred, or touches what's most sacred, at least in Buddhist terms, when the mindfulness, when the awareness includes everything, when nothing's excluded, when there's no movement in the mind to exclude something, I shouldn't pay attention to that. Not that. That's outside. That doesn't really count. That doesn't really matter. This is better over here. The mindfulness is sacred when there's no divisions in the field of awareness, and the mindfulness doesn't contract, doesn't resist. The mindfulness has no location. The mindfulness, the awareness has no location. The awareness has no movement because it encompasses everything. So when everything's included, then we touch what is sacred. As soon as the mind has a division in it, it says, oh, that doesn't count. That's wrong. That I have to exclude. Then we've left the sacred. Now, the thing important to say here is that your thinking mind or your action body might have to sometimes say no to things and exclude things. But there's no need for the mind, the awareness, to say no for the purposes of attention. Your actions and your attention are two different things. So the sacred world has to do with an attention includes everything. In Zen, they call it sometimes the big mind. What you do with your actions is a different question. So your actions might say, no way, you can't come in here. But the awareness hasn't said that. The awareness is actually doesn't contract, doesn't resist, includes everything. So part of what we do in mindfulness is to engage the mindfulness, develop the mindfulness, and with the mindfulness begin seeing more clearly what's actually happening. As we see more clearly what's happening, all the things which are extra that we do, they're not needed in any given situation, have a chance to fall away. We drop them, or we don't pick them up. The gatekeeper leaves them alone. As we leave things alone, don't do all this extra stuff, then we have this greater space, in a sense, in the mind, greater openness, greater potential in the mind that's kind of created. And in that potential, in that field of openness, can come other factors, beautiful factors, the other factors of awakening. And as the other factors of awakening are there to support the mindfulness gets stronger and stronger. The other factors of awakening are supports for the development and cultivation of mindfulness. And then when the other factors are strong enough, then the mindfulness becomes really, truly, amazingly all-embracing, all-inclusive. So all-embracing and all-inclusive that there's no center for it. And if there's no center for it, where are you? You're free, which is a nice place to be. So, that's some thoughts about mindfulness. And I encourage you to, during the week, to reflect further on this question of what benefits might there be for you in practicing attention, bringing presence to a situation, attention and presence first and foremost before speaking or acting. Think about that. But more important than think about it, why don't you think about or look for some situations over the next week where normally you would rush in with words or rush in with action and then don't do the normal thing. And rather, like that. And I got laughter out of some of you. That was unexpected. So thank you very much.